You may have noticed that we bow down a lot around here. We're trying to develop an attitude of respect. We respect the Buddha because he respects something worthy of respect within ourselves, which is our desire for true happiness. Happiness that harms no one, a happiness that lasts. So he wants us to respect that as well. The world tells us other things. Look for happiness in the things they can sell you. And as for the idea of a happiness that's lasting, it's unconditioned, they tell you to just put that out of your mind. Say that it's impossible. I've actually talked to some Buddhist scholars who say that the idea of conditioned beings finding an unconditioned happiness doesn't make sense. How can anything conditioned know what's unconditioned? But that's defining yourself to begin with, before you've even had a chance to try. Look at the Buddha's search for happiness. He didn't define himself. He said that desire for true happiness is something that's worthwhile. And for him it was worth a lot of sacrifice. When he found the way, he found that it really was worthwhile. He taught it to others. He never tried to define who you are or what you are. He did say, take your desire for happiness seriously, not in a grim way, but be consistent about it. Try to find happiness in a wise way. And you find that it's not just hedonistic, you're not just going for pleasures. As pleasures slip through your fingers like water. You look for happiness in a wise way. First you ask yourself, what is wisdom? How do you start getting wise? The Buddha himself said, if you recognize your own foolishness, you are to that extent wise. Because you realize if you did something that was foolish, you could be foolish only if you had a choice. If there are no choices, you couldn't say that an action was foolish. But the fact that you do have choices is what allows people to be wise or foolish. And then the wisdom comes from learning from your mistakes. The basic question for wisdom is, what when I do it will lead to my long-term welfare and happiness? What when I do it will lead to my long-term harm and suffering? The wisdom there lies in seeing that your happiness and suffering will depend on your actions, and that you do have a choice. Again, if you didn't have choices, the idea of should, doing, and not should just don't make any sense. So recognize that your actions are important. And of course that long-term happiness is better than short-term. And it is possible. All too often you hear that the pleasures of the world, the pleasures that you find in life, come and go, everything is inconstant. Well, the Buddha didn't say that everything was inconstant. Nibbana, the deathless, that is constant. And in their relative long and short pleasures, some pleasures last for a long, long time, even within the conditioned world. So long-term is better than short-term, and it is possible. And it depends on your actions. That's the beginning of wisdom. That's one of the qualities of the Buddha himself that he developed in the course of looking for true happiness. The second quality he developed was compassion. Compassion for himself, compassion for others. There's a story in the canon. King Visenadi is in a private apartment with one of his queens, Queen Mallika. And in a tender moment, he turns to her and he says, is there anyone you love more than yourself? You know what he's thinking. Typical king. He wants her to say, yes, Your Majesty, I love you more than I love myself. And if this were a Hollywood movie, that's probably what she'd say. But this is the Pali Canon. You don't get away with saying stupid things in the Pali Canon. She said, no, there's nobody I love more than myself. And how about you? Anybody you love more than yourself? The king has to admit, no, there's nobody he loves more than himself. So that's the end of that scene. He goes down from the palace, goes to see the Buddha. Tells the Buddha what the queen said. And the Buddha said, you know, she's right. You could search the whole world over and you wouldn't find anybody you love more than yourself. At the same time, everybody else loves themselves just as fiercely. So the conclusion he draws from that is not to just grab what you want. He says you shouldn't harm other people or get them to do harm. Because if your happiness harms other people, they're not going to stand for it. And if you actually get them to do harm in your search for happiness, they're going to suffer the consequences of their actions. And they're going to hate you. So if you really want your happiness to be long-term, you have to be not only wise, but also compassionate. Take other people's happiness into consideration. That's the second quality that the Buddha has developed in his search for true happiness. The third quality is purity. It's when you really carry it through with your wise and compassionate intentions. There's another scene in the canon where the Buddha goes to see his son, Rahula, who's a 7-year-old novice at the time. Rahula sees the Buddha coming in the distance. He sets out some water in a dipper for the Buddha to wash his feet. The Buddha comes, he washes his feet. He leaves a little bit of water in the dipper. He shows it to Rahula. He says, "Do you see this little bit of water in the dipper?" Rahula says, "Yes." The Buddha says, "That's how little goodness there is in a person who tells a deliberate lie with no sense of shame." You wonder if Rahula told a lie that day. Then the Buddha throws the water away. He says, "See how that water is thrown away?" "Yes." That's what happens to the goodness of a person who tells a deliberate lie with no sense of shame. It gets thrown away. Then he shows the empty dipper to Rahula, turns it over, and basically to make the point that the goodness of a person who tells a deliberate lie is empty and overturned. So he starts out with the principle of truthfulness as being essential for the practice, essential for any search for true happiness. And then he goes on to give some instructions on how to become pure in your actions. So that just as you would use a mirror to look at your face, you should look in your actions to get a sense of your own mind. Before you do anything, ask yourself, this action that I intend to do, what do I think the consequences are going to be? If you foresee any harm, don't do it. If you don't see any harm, you go ahead and do it. While you're doing it, you look for any consequences that come up immediately. Because some things in life, it's not the case that you do something in this lifetime and wait for another lifetime. You put your finger in a fire, it's going to hurt now. You spit into the wind, it's going to come right back at you. So if you see that even though you didn't intend harm, harm is actually coming about, you stop. If you don't see any harm, you can continue. When you're done, you're still not done. You look at the long-term consequences of the actions. And you see that over time, the action did cause harm. You develop a healthy sense of shame around it. And a healthy sense of shame is something that needs to be explained. There's the shame that's the opposite of pride, and there's shame that's the opposite of shamelessness. The Buddha never taught the first kind of shame. The healthy sense of shame is the second one. The shame that wants to look good in the eyes of good people, wise people. So you develop that sense of shame around your mistake. And then you go talk it over with someone else who's more advanced on the path, someone you trust, to get some advice from them. But if you saw that your action did not cause any harm, the Buddha says, take joy in the fact that your training is progressing, and then keep on training. In other words, you take joy, but you're not yet satisfied. You find happiness and say, I want to do this better and better. You're mastering the principle of karma as a skill. As the Buddha said, it's in this way that people purify themselves. People in the past, people in the future, people in the present moment, this is how everybody purifies themselves. By taking responsibility for their actions. You notice in the questions you ask, this action I want to do, this action I am doing, this action I have done. There's still an I there. We hear so much about not-self, but it makes us forget that Buddha had you develop a very strong sense of self as part of the path. You let it go only when you don't need it anymore. So have a sense that you're responsible, and you take responsibility. You commit yourself to doing what you think is right, and then you reflect on the results. These two principles, commitment and reflection, that, the Buddha says, is how the Dharma is nurtured. This is how you develop purity. In all these cases, you're looking for happiness, but trying to do it in a wise way. And in the course of doing it, unlike the pleasures of the world, where the more you pursue them, the worse your character becomes. In this way, you look for true happiness, your character becomes better. You become more wise, more compassionate, purer in your actions. Someone once commented that looking at your actions in this way takes a lot of time. But then what else are you going to look at? You can look for entertainment out in the world. And the world offers entertainment, but it also offers a lot of other things that you really don't want to pick up. And a lot of times what the media are telling you are basically things over which you have no control and distract you from things over which you do have control. If you take your own actions seriously and take your desire for happiness seriously, you grow as a person. Ultimately, you become a member of the Noble Sangha, and that way you become a good example to others. Because when we talk about refuge in Buddhism, they say we have to take refuge in the Triple Gem, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. But what does that mean? Is the Buddha going to come down and pick you up and pull you out of your problems? No. The Dharma is just the words in the books? No. The Sangha is just the monks you see walking around? No. You're looking at the qualities of the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Noble Sangha. Take them as examples. That's how you find refuge in these things. And then as you develop those qualities within you, your refuge is inside, where it's safe. And you keep on following this practice. It takes you ultimately to a point where you find a happiness that doesn't depend on conditions. That's when you're really safe. So as I said, the Buddha tells us to respect something within us that is worthy of respect, our desire for true happiness. And as we follow his example, developing qualities of wisdom, compassion, and purity, we become more and more worthy of respect ourselves. This is how we find safety in life. That king, Basenadi, came to see the Buddha one time. This is someone who had conquered quite a large kingdom. Now all of a sudden he finds he has a Buddha on the outskirts of his city. Mallika was the person who convinced him that the Buddha was worth getting to know. And he would come to see the Buddha every now and then. But some realization he'd had, tested out with the Buddha. There's one case where he comes to the Buddha. He says, you know, you can have a big army, but if you don't observe the precepts, if you don't live a life of virtue, you leave yourself unprotected despite that army. But if you have no army, but you follow a life of virtue, you're protected all around. For him, that was a big realization. The Buddha confirmed that he's right. Your protection lies in your goodness. And that's a heartwarming thing to hear. If your protection had to rely on arms and weapons, this would be a very, very unpleasant world to live in. And for people who think in those terms, it is an unpleasant world. But you learn to look for your protection in the good qualities you develop in your mind. You become a person you can live with. And the world becomes your place to develop as much goodness as you can. You don't know how much time you have, but you do have right now. So take advantage of it.